This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Wednesday, June 25th. I'm John Wanamaker. The St. Paul School Board has given the green light to a multi-million dollar plan to give an iPad to each student. The board voted 5-2 last night to approve a 6-year lease with Apple. The initial rollout would cost nearly $6 million and involve 37 schools. The program would eventually be expanded to cover more than 60 schools and cost around $8 million a year. Governor Mark Dayton says he may have to call legislators back to the Capitol in a special session to approve more disaster aid to areas plagued by flooding. Dayton talked about the state's relief while touring Delano yesterday. Delano city officials say the Crow River, which runs right through town, has reached its highest level in nearly 50 years. Dayton said the state may need to approve more emergency aid due to the widespread damage caused by recent heavy rains.
We have to call a special session. We'll do so. I don't want to do that, but we've done that before with disaster relief, and it's been cooperative and bipartisan, and I expect it would be again.
Dayton says it may take several weeks to determine if the state is eligible for federal disaster relief, but he says he will lobby for that relief when President Obama visits the Twin Cities tomorrow. In the city of Mendota, 4 homes are under the threat of a mudslide from the bluff above them. Peter Cox has more.
A portion of Upper D Street has a large crack about 4 inches wide that runs 75 feet. Mendota Mayor Brian Milkey says there's serious risk to the houses below.
It's probably about a 150-foot, pretty steep bluff line. If that bluff completely gives way and could do some significant damage, if not total damage, to the homes below.
The city asked 4 households to evacuate. 3 have done so. Milkey says the city's annual budget of $165,000 can't come close to covering the more than $500,000 it would take to build a more stable road. Instead, he's hoping the county can qualify for state and federal disaster relief funds. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And as rivers hit their crests across the state, Minnesotans are worried about how the flooding might affect their backyards or basements. But in the long term, the flooding across sections of the state could hurt parts of the ecosystem. Satish Gupta from the U of M's Department of Soil, Water, and Climate says that the sewage dumps and landslides that have occurred in or near the Minnesota River Valley put chemicals into river sediment.
The sediments are picking up the phosphorus, and then that sediments are depositing in Lake Pepin or some other areas in between Mankato and Lake Pepin. And in, you know, a year or two, when we have a dry weather condition, we're going to have algal bloom.
In some cases, the rapid increase in algae can be harmful to fish, plants, and animals. This spring's wet conditions have been hard on farmers, especially those in the southwestern part of the state. Morning Edition host Kathy Werzer talked with one expert about how they're coping.
Heavy rain this spring has flooded farms across Minnesota, especially in the southwestern corner of the state. Crops like corn and soybeans are likely to fail if underwater for several days in a row. That leaves farmers wondering what to do when the water recedes. Do you replant or leave the fields barren? It's a tough decision and an urgent one this time of year. Kent Tesey is a farm management analyst in Lake Crystal, Minnesota. He joins us on the phone this morning. How are you, Kent?
Well, doing great.
Good. Thanks for joining us. Say, just how tough is the situation for farmers?
Well, it's actually, as you pointed out, there certainly wasn't an acute situation down in southwest Minnesota with where they had 6 to 9 inches of rain out of one rainfall event. But really across the state, there's pockets of drown-out damage to corn and soybeans. And then, of course, if you get around the ring around the Twin Cities, the South Metro, West Metro, North Metro, even into Wisconsin, a lot of those farmers didn't get all their crop planted the first time, and not only dealing with some drown-out damage. So there's a lot of acres affected here statewide, and as you said, farmers are facing some very difficult decisions here on whether they should replant and just kind of assessing where they're at for the year economically.
Well, this is about mid-June at this point. Can you replant corn and soybeans?
Well, as we look at it, corn is probably, for most farmers, going to be out of the question. Really, once you get past the middle of June, and we're, you know, looking at the 25th of June today, your chances, if you were going to raise corn for grain to harvest, of getting a viable yield become very small, and to find early enough corn to even produce a crop. Now, that given, there are still livestock producers out there with dairy cattle and beef cattle that can utilize the corn as corn silage, where they harvest the entire crop and don't have to wait for that grain to fully mature. And if they have feed needs, they may still try to put some corn in. Soybeans is a little different. There are some very good early varieties of soybeans available, especially for the southern part of Minnesota. And so farmers may try to, if they can get in yet this in the, within the next week, try to get some soybeans in. Once we get out around the 1st of July, that becomes kind of an iffy deal as well. Your best hope from about the 25th of June on with soybeans to early July is maybe 50 to 60% of a normal yield. So if you normally get 50 bushels an acre for soybeans, your best hope is maybe 25 to 30 bushels an acre. And, of course, with tight margins in crop production, that really cuts in, but it's better than getting nothing. And the challenge will be how fast the fields dry out.
This doesn't sound good, but I would presume that many farmers have crop insurance.
They do have crop insurance. For those that, you know, aren't familiar, crop insurance is kind of like any other type of insurance. You do have a deductible. So if farmers are insuring, say 180 bushels an acre this year, with, there's a set price on there. It was probably around a little over $800 an acre. If they have a 75% crop insurance coverage, that means their coverage only goes up to $600. So that first $200 a loss is their loss as a deductible. And most farmers in southern and western Minnesota probably have 75 or 80% coverage on most of their corn and soybeans. The highest level of coverage that you can purchase is 85%, but the 75 and 80% levels are more common.
So there are going to be a number of farmers taking some kind of a financial hit on this.
Yeah, they are. We came into the year already expecting or knowing that our crop margins were a lot tighter than they've been in recent years because of lower prices. Right now, the price for new crop corn is down near $4 a bushel, in some locations even below $4 a bushel. As recently as a couple years ago, we were above $6 a bushel. So it definitely will have an economic effect, probably a bigger economic effect than had we had this problem 2 or 3 years ago with some higher prices. And, of course, that economic effect affects farmers directly and immediately, but it also portrays out into the rural communities as farm families have less dollars to spend and farmers have less dollars to spend on improvements on their farm, buying farm machinery, upgrading facilities, that type of thing.
That's farm management specialist Kent Tesey speaking with Morning Edition host Kathy Werzer. This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Housing values are continuing to rise in the Twin Cities metro area, but the rate of increase is starting to slow. That's according to statistics out from the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Matt Sepik reports.
Sale prices in the metro area rose 9.4% over the year ending in April. Annual gains for March were 11%. David Blitzer heads the index committee at S&P Dow Jones. He says nationwide, the market appears to be coasting into a normal pattern where prices rise a few percentage points over the rate of inflation.
Most likely by the end of this year, we'll be in that range. Home prices will be going up something like 3 to 8% year over year.
Blitzer says that's healthy because continued growth at recent rates would price many people out of the market. While all 20 cities in the Case-Shiller Index are reporting annual price gains, only Boston saw a higher growth rate in April than in March. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
President Obama will be in Minneapolis at the end of the week to raise campaign money, hold a town hall meeting at Minnehaha Park, and speak at the Lake Harriet Bandshell. He also plans to visit a Minneapolis woman who wrote him a letter about her struggle to make ends meet. Mark Sedeklik reports.
In a White House video, President Obama says he's looking forward to meeting Rebecca from Minneapolis on Thursday. In the video, Obama senior advisor Dan Pfeiffer says the visit is part of a new initiative.
The president's trip to Minnesota to meet Rebecca is going to be part of a series of days in the life we're going to do, where the president's going to visit a community, spend the whole day there, talk to small business owners, families, workers, get a real sense of what's happening in America, and have a real discussion with them about how we move this country forward.
The president's speech at Lake Harriet Friday morning is open to the public. First come, first served tickets will be available at the Bandshell starting at noon Wednesday. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
More details emerging in the case of a Waseca teen who allegedly planned to attack his high school. Court records released yesterday show 17-year-old John Ledoux told police the night of his arrest that he made plans to kill his family. Then he'd attack classmates at Waseca Junior and Senior High School. Police officers had encountered Ledoux at a storage locker on April 29th after a nearby resident reported suspicious activity. In searches of the teenager's house and the storage locker, police said they found a gun, explosives, bomb-making supplies, and a journal allegedly outlining his plans for the attacks. Waseca County prosecutors charged Ledoux in early May with several counts, including attempted first-degree murder. Ledoux entered a denial plea, the juvenile equivalent of a not guilty plea. A priest who was admitted to inappropriate wrestling with boys testified in April that the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis does not closely monitor him. 72-year-old Reverend Jerome Kern said he meets with a monitor a few times a year for about an hour. Archbishop John Neinstedt included Kern on a list of priests with credible claims against them of sexual abuse of a minor, that list released in December under court order. Kern's testimony, released yesterday by St. Paul attorney Jeff Anderson, is part of a lawsuit brought in November of last year by an unnamed man who says he was sexually abused by the priest in the 1970s, from when he was about 12 to 16 years old. The Minneapolis Public Schools and the University of Minnesota are launching a new partnership that focuses on early childhood education. Catherine Richard reports.
The jointly funded partnership will transform an unused school in North Minneapolis into a facility dedicated to early childhood education. Minneapolis Schools Chief Operating Officer Robert Doty says the school will make sure up to 200 kids are ready for kindergarten. But Doty says the facility will also serve as a lab for all things early childhood education. That means parent education classes, teacher development, and a clinic.
First of all, I hope in 5 years that we have a replicatable model. We want to make sure this is a citywide, has citywide impact. And we want to make sure that in 5 years we can say we are making an actual dent in the notion of adding more capacity within the early childhood community for quality seats for kids.
The school is slated to open in December of 2015. Catherine Richard, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minneapolis city officials have outlined public safety measures that will go into effect during Major League Baseball's All-Star Game festivities in Minneapolis next month. Police Chief Janae Harto says police officers will be very visible downtown. She says officers will be patrolling on foot, on bicycles, and on horseback.
We want people to have a really great, fun atmosphere, but we also understand that we need to make sure that public safety is our number one priority. Although we don't expect major issues, we do have to plan for those. Cops are going to be everywhere. Expect to see hundreds of officers, but not a lot of squad cars. That's the goal. More cops than cars.
Metro Transit Police will also be out in force downtown, as well as on buses and light rail trains. That's the NPR News update for Wednesday, June 25th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.